He was born in the Bitterroot Valley in the early morning rain.
Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I'm joined by the number one New York Times bestselling author, C.J. Box, who's out with a brand new novel. This is in the Cassie Duell series. This is Treasure State, and it's available everywhere. Cassie's a private investigator in Montana. And C.J., you gave us a two-for-one in this. She's got two cases going on, and, well, more than that, but nonetheless, two fun cases that you've told us about in this one. One is kind of based on a real-life story. Can you kind of set up these two competing investigations Cassie has?
Sure. One of the cases is based on a true life story that I think a lot of people are aware of. A few years ago, a man named Forrest Fenn, F-E-N-N, did a treasure poem. He hid $2 million in gold and jewelry out somewhere in the western part of the U.S., did a poem, then he said if you followed the poem and understood it, you'd find the treasure. That what in real life what that resulted in were hundreds and hundreds of people out all over national parks and all over the West and all over the Rocky Mountains trying to find this poem. Five people died trying to find it, and finally it was found 2 years ago in Wyoming. And it was such a big story out here that I wanted to fictionalize it and make it, put it in this book. And in Treasure State, Cassie is actually hired by the author of the poem to try to find him, because he figures that if people can figure out his identity, they'll be able to find the treasure, and he hopes he's hidden his identity well enough. So that's one case. The other case is a woman who calls Cassie from Florida and says that a very, very charismatic man has built her out of her entire fortune, millions of dollars, and then vanished. And she believes this man is in Montana, and Cassie's hired to try to find this guy who has been going around the country bilking very, very, very wealthy widows out of their entire life's fortune. So the two cases are going at once, and it's a kind of different book. It's not as dark as some of the earlier ones, and I'm really happy with it.
Some of the locations in Montana I was very interested to learn more about, and one of them in particular is Butte. And part of the story takes place in Butte, and I never realized how different Butte is from the rest of Montana. Can you explain, for those of us who've never been there, how that city functions there, kind of different from every other city in Montana?
Sure. I mean, when people think of Montana, they think of, you know, big skies and cowboys and hiking and wildlife, and which is all true. But in the city, Butte was once called the richest hill on earth because of a huge copper discovery in the early 1900s, and it was it grew up as almost an industrial town, almost like something in western Pennsylvania, for example, in the middle of the mountains, in the middle of cowboy country, and has a totally different culture than the rest of the state. It still exists. It's still there. It's got old Victorian buildings and brick and, you know, narrow streets, and it looks very, at least Eastern U.S. or even England, you know, English or Scottish. And the people there are very proud of this place, but it's totally unlike the rest of Montana and continues to be so.
There's a scene, several scenes in the book where Cassie is going to the homes of authors, and I kind of thought a little bit tongue-in-cheek about this, because I imagined you holed up in your house writing, because authors, as the narrative says, have nowhere to go but be home. And so is there a little bit of truth to that, the fact that, I mean, do you ever have people stopping by your residence and asking you questions, not necessarily a private investigator, but just people who are interested in your writings?
Well, very, very rarely. I try to make that not happen. there are people out there who, for some reason, want to visit with authors personally by going to their homes. It's not a good idea. It's not cool, especially those of us who live out on ranches with lots of guns. But in this case, what I wanted to do was kind of poke fun at the archetype and the identities and the egos of some authors who are out there. and that was a lot of fun to write about. I'll never reveal who I had in mind on all the authors that Cassie visits, but it was fun to write.
There was another soliloquy that one of the authors, about two-thirds of the way book, there's two-thirds of the way through the book, there's a soliloquy that one of the authors gets into about people who think that everything in fiction must come from something in real life. And I realize part of this story came from real life, but what were you trying to get at there to show how the creative mind works, that some things can just be made up out of whole cloth?
Well, that's the point, exactly that. And that is, currently I'm on a book tour, and every event someone says, okay, where did you meet this person that you put in the book? Where do you get your ideas, kind of thing? And it's the hardest questions to answer, because not every character is based on real people. Some are wholly made up, sometimes based on someone that you might even see get out of a car or walk through an airport who you don't even meet. So it's not all just drawn from real life. That's the creative part, and that's the really hard part to explain.
Is it also the really hard part to do? Because I would imagine that you at least have a little bit of a grain of something that you want, and you start combining characteristics, but maintaining that type of personality for somebody in a book has got to be difficult to maintain the consistency, because when you think of a real person, they come to you fully formed, whereas these characters come and go. So how difficult is that to maintain that personality of a person while you create them in your mind?
I think it is very difficult, but I think that the key to that, even a minor character in a book, is to figure out what their point of view is. They're not there. They don't exist simply to advance my story. They exist because they have, motivations of their own. And once you can figure out what their motivation is and their point of view is, then they can exist very comfortably in the story.
When you set about writing this book, I love the fact that Cassie is a private investigator, and we think of all the great private investigators in literature. They always seem to have a different perspective than police do, and there's that fight between police and private investigators. And I kind of understand where that comes from, a lot of territorial stuff, but there's certain things private investigators can do that police just can't do, and in particular, missing persons, because if someone doesn't want to be found, it's not necessarily a crime that police need to investigate.
Right, and plus there's a profit motive. A private investigator has a client. They get paid by the hour. Cassie makes no apologies for wanting to be successful and make money, and sometimes charge difficult clients more than others. So that is, it's fun to write from that point of view. Plus, I think private investigators can be a little looser with who they are. They can kind of misidentify themselves. They don't have to immediately identify that they're the cops. They're there to ask questions. They can be a little more subtle, and it's always the investigation and the way they do it that I think makes my novels very interesting.
I realize that some of these characters, well, all the characters are people that you created, and there's some characters in the book that I just hate from the get-go and never like them. Do you have characters that you like that have no likable qualities to you whatsoever?
Absolutely, and I think sometimes they're the most fun to write. I do want to give, I don't want to make them simply, evil. Everything they do is evil and bad, and you've got to give them, again, that motivation and that point of view, why they do what they do. But it's very interesting to explore the really bad characters. And with Cassie, goes back to the Lizard King and the serial killer truck driver. I've always, kind of dwelled on some of the really, really bad people.
One of the other things I also enjoy is the wildlife that you put into the book. It's a porcupine in this book. And then when part of the story takes place in Florida, we read about alligators. And it got me thinking, wildlife permeates every location. And is that something that's near and dear to your heart, is to try to set up the location by just dealing with the wildlife there?
That's a good observation. I think it is. Where I live on a little ranch, there's wildlife every day. And I really like to, I think that provides, if you describe it well or illustrate that, it gives a great sense of place for the reader to put them there. Thank you for that. That was an interesting thing to say.
All right. Well, the book is called Treasure State. It's the latest Cassie Duell novel by C.J. Box. It's available everywhere. C.J., I just love your writing. This book was, like I say, it wasn't as dark, and I found it just a very fun read for a few hours one night, and I thank you for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you for having me back. It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Oh.